What is delightful appreciation? Does anyone have delightful appreciation in their life? It's a good instant illumination topic. Delightful appreciation is when we appreciate things not because we have to, but because we feel good in ourselves. Now, people go to school, and when they give delightful appreciation to their teachers, they can't do enough for them. They'll tell them everything, they'll share with them everything. When you love your teachers, they just want to give you all the knowledge they have. They want to give you all of the joy they have. When you hate your teachers, like you hate mathematics or you hate certain subjects, you know, when you hate your teachers, what happens? Then the learning curve is, you know, opposite, is down, very down. Now, how can we develop a delightful appreciation in ourselves for everything we're getting in life? How can we develop that? Well, we develop it by not worshiping our teachers, not worshiping the subject, not worshiping the opportunity, but what?
Have delightful appreciation.
We have a delightful appreciation of what?
Of ourselves.
Of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Not anything else. When you have a delightful appreciation of yourself, everybody wants to give you of their vast storehouse of understanding, of wisdom, and every other good thing. And if you don't have this delightful appreciation of yourself, then nobody wants to do anything for you. They all want to back off. They all want to say, no, do it yourself. I like me. I teach what I like. And if you don't like me and want to hear what I have to share, I have no interest in sharing it with you, because I don't have to prove what I like to anybody. I just like it. Now, this is what we each want inside of ourselves. That delightful appreciation of who we are and where we're going and what we want out of life. Now, what do you want out of life? What do you think is the most wonderful thing in the world for you to have out of life? Is it anything in the outer? No. Is it a lovely place to live? Is it a lovely family? Is it a lovely world? Is it a peaceful world? Is it an exciting world? It's inside of you. Now, I'm going to take Anita. I'm going to take all her clothes away from her, all of her toys away from her, everything. She's just naked as a jaybird. I'm going to put her on the edge of the forest. Now, she can go in that forest, and she can delightfully appreciate it, if she delightfully appreciates herself. And she'll have the time of her life. Now, I put Ingeborg on the edge of that same forest, naked as a jaybird, and Ingeborg says, oh, look, here's a beautiful meadow. Here's a beautiful field. One tree out in the middle of the field. And Ingeborg goes through the field to that one tree out there and lays down on the tree and says, isn't this wonderful? She has a delightful appreciation. Totally different. Two opportunities. She could have gone in the forest like Anita did. And Anita just found all of her friends in the forest. She found the rabbits, and she found the squirrels, and she found the quail, and she found the bears, and she found the lions and the tigers, and she found all these things who were her friends. And Ingeborg found all the things that were her friends out under the tree. Now, what made the difference? They delightfully were appreciating themselves. Mm-hmm. You will always find in every experience in life who you are. And if you can be delightfully satisfied, delightfully appreciative of wherever you are and whatever you're doing, then things have meaning for you and have purpose. But if you go through experiences and you complain and you say, I haven't got a daddy and a mommy, you know, like my friend Stan Felzo, he didn't have any mother and dad, but his grandmother and grandfather took over for him. And so instead of saying, oh, my old grandmother and grandfather, you know, they're 45 years old and they're 50 years old, but they're my grandfather and grandmother, you know. They're old, old people, you know. Then what happens? The learning curve stops. And the hatred curve goes on. both of them absolutely destructive. Now, if, as Stan did, he said, I am delightfully appreciative of my grandparents and everything they do for me. They are fabulous. They're wonderful. And what did they have to be? They had to be fabulous and wonderful because that was his expectation of them. Anita went in the forest. What did she find? Did she find anything bad in the forest that was going to hurt her? She found everything that was lovely. She says, look at this. There's the sunlight filtering down through the trees. Look, there's a big deer. See him? With big antlers and horns. And there's Bambi standing next to him. Of course it's Bambi. Who else would be standing next to him, Anita? Who else? Bambi. And who's next to Bambi? You can call me Flower, if you like. A little skunk and a rabbit. And other. All beautiful things according to our expectation. According to what we create out of the situation. And so, Ingeborg, she's always been a little one to lie down on the job. She laid down under the tree, and the snake crawled over her leg, and she says, hi, guy, this is nice weather we're having, isn't it? And the snake went right on its way. She was untouched by it. But, you know, she didn't even get up. She wasn't even scared, because that took energy, you know, and she wasn't about to waste energy on a snake. But then what happened in Ingeborg's life? A tiger came along with 6 cubs.
Oh.
And walked right up to Ingeborg. And the tiger looked at Ingeborg and said to her cubs, stay here with this lady. And then the tiger went off to get some food.
Oh.
And so Ingeborg had these kittens curling all over her, under her and over her and on top of her and everything. And she was just in heaven.
Mm.
And later the tiger came back and didn't come to Ingeborg, but stood on the hillside and said, shh, shh, shh. Come on, you guys, dinner time. Yes, Rex. And the cubs rushed off to their mummy. Now, was Ingeborg interested in a tiger in her life, or was she interested in the cubs in her life? She was interested in the cubs. You get what you want when you delightfully appreciate every little circumstance that comes your way. When you delightfully appreciate. Now, what did I say to the judge in Switzerland?
Ah, to for you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
When he gave me a coat that shouldn't have been given to anybody, but the coat was filled with love. The coat was his favorite coat. He had worn it for years and years and years and years and years and years and even before that. But it's his favorite coat. He gave me that coat with love. I could not say no to his loving gesture.
Mm-hmm.
It came up to here on my sleeve. He was a shorter man than I.
I remember.
You remember. But I couldn't say no because he gave it with so much love. And because he gave it with so much love, he gave me many other things too. And we all open the door of our life by receiving with love, giving with love, living with love, with divine, delightful appreciation. That's something that's not easy to do. Now, point 2 of our beautiful thought here. How do you develop delightful appreciation? How do you develop the ability to have delightful appreciation? Well, now, Stefan, what was his name? Stanley Felzo. Yeah, his first name was Stefan. Stanley Felzo. He had inside of himself, he should have been unhappy because his mommy and daddy disappeared when he was just a little guy. But he wasn't old enough to really concern him. But they're gone. He never had them. All he knew were his grandparents. Now, he himself or somebody told him or somehow he got the message to delightfully appreciate everything you have. Somebody might have said, he said, no, I don't have any mommy and daddy. But you got a grandma and grandma, grandma and grandpa. Appreciate them. Appreciate them. Somebody might have said that. Some neighbor or some person who was totally out of the picture, but able to say something to him and have it be meaningful. Delightfully appreciate. And they might have said to him, you know, Stanley, Stan, you know, if you delightfully appreciate, and then they wouldn't say that. They would say, every time I delightfully appreciate something, something else comes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I delight, you know, that's what we, you know, you got to have delightful appreciation in you or you're not going to get anywhere. You tell that to people and they'll say, no way, get out of my world. But if you say to them, you know, my mom gave me an old shoe. And I said, Mom, what am I going to do with one old shoe? What is this all about? One old shoe, Mom. And Mom didn't say a thing. And I thought about it. What am I going to do with one old shoe? Yes. I have a friend. His name is George. And George lost his leg. And he only has one leg and a crutch. And he could wear that one shoe. It would fit him fine. And it's still in good enough condition. And I'm going to give it to George. So I take the shoe, and I, you like my stories, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You take the shoe, and you give, he took the shoe, you know, Stanley took the shoe and gave it to George. And George says, Stanley, you always do so many wonderful things for everybody. How did you know that I needed my right shoe, but I didn't have one? How did you know? I lost my shoes in the accident, and it's depression time, and mother couldn't afford to buy just one shoe because it didn't seem right, you know. But you gave me one shoe. Well, you got to thank my dad, my grandpa, for that. My grandpa gave it to me, or my grandma gave it to me. You know, I couldn't figure out why I should have one shoe. Now I know, because I had it to give to you, because you're my bestest of all friends in the world, you know. And now, you see, having a delightful appreciation for all things in life doesn't come by accident. It comes by choice. Because Stanley might have been very upset with his grandma giving him one shoe. What's the matter with you? I got to use a crutch to get around with just one shoe and keep the other foot off the ground, you know? Is that what you want me to do? Well, he didn't say a stupid thing like that. He just said, okay, there's a reason everything happens in my life, and I have created that reason. I have created that happening in my life, and I'm ready for the answer. And the answer is, my friend George! Oh, George, I got a present for you. What a beautiful shoe. Yeah, my grandma gave it to me. And I need two shoes. And you lost one leg, so now you need one shoe. And, oh, Stanley, you're so wonderful. You're so thoughtful. You're so loving. And, you know, he wouldn't say all that stuff, but he'd just beam. And Stanley would say, delightful appreciation. He would be in that state of bliss, that state of joy. He'd be like Ingeborg lying in the meadow with the little kittens playing all over, lion kittens. And Anita going into the forest and making friends with everything, not just the plants, the trees, the flowers, the birds and the bees, and but the animals. And the lizards, and all the crazy things. And she would just gather them about them. You know what Anita does? Anita is the cause, the reason, the purpose, why Disney created all of the beautiful animal shows that Disney created. He created right out of Anita's consciousness. And whenever you see these little children's shows where the flowers are talking to people and things like that, that's Anita at work there.
Nice.
But you see, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And when you see the little lions cuddling up against the people who are taking care of them in the parks of Africa and stuff like that, or in the zoos and things like that, that's from Ingeborg teaching him that all these little lions, all these, they were cubs at one time. They don't know how to be angry. They had to search for food and they had to do things tough to get it, you know. But that's okay. Now, what is it that you want? Do you want that? It takes discipline. It takes self-discipline. Oh, there's some good reason for this. I don't know what it is right now, but there's a good reason for this, and I will find out what it is. There's a good reason for this. Whatever happens to you in your life, you discipline yourself to thinking, there's a good reason for this, even if it's good things. There's a good reason for this, and you will figure it out. Now, Anita is standing on the street corner and looking like a goddess, you know, just so beautiful. Her clothing is so form-fitting, and she just looks so lovely, and her skin so fresh and inviting. And this man came along, and he says, "You are gorgeous. What is your name? I'd like to give you a gift." "Anita. Anita Lope. Lop, Lope. Anita." And he says, "What a lovely name." He says, "Where do you live?" And you are so innocent and so open, you tell him. And he says, "Oh, 111 Far Valley Road, Campo, California. Beautiful." Okay. So you don't see him again. But he has been enamored, delighted. He has been just begeistered by your being, the magic lady that you are. And so a few days later, in the mail, you receive a check for $8 million, you know. And you think, yeah, yeah. Now, did he want something from you? Did he enjoy something from you? Did he enjoy your innocence, your beauty, your charisma, your magic that you shine forth without any reason? You didn't go around saying, "I need $1 million. I need anybody who give me $1 million. I'll just take one or two." No, you're just so beautiful. The world pours its goodness on you because you disciplined yourself to be receptive. And when you are receptive to all the good that comes to you from any source, then it's good. Now, Ingeborg, she has never learned to be receptive in her life. She's always been a boss, always been in charge of everything, always been on top of everything, always been totally master of what she did, and she didn't do half the things she should have done. And so now she is in a time in her life where she is on the receiving end. Now, why do people do nice things to her? Why does she get a pension? Why does she get this money? Why does the Medi-Cal and Medicare work with her? Why do these things, why do they happen to her? She doesn't question it. She just accepts it as the most natural thing in the world. Naturally, all things would come to me. You understand? Naturally. Now, if she can do that with a happy heart, with a joyous heart, it'll keep coming. But if she ever starts to snarl at anybody and get angry at anybody, that's angry at herself, that anger is going to close off all those doorways that brings good things into her life. She needs to constantly discipline herself, constantly train herself to always be loving and generous and helpful and open with all in life. And if she's not, the door closes, bang, slams in her face. She, "What happened? How come my pension stopped? How come this stopped? How come that got belittled? How come that?" If you are loving and open and generous in all areas, it doesn't stop, it grows. And other sources like Anita's man who looked at her and said, "That's the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in my life. The most lovely charisma. I want to say thank you to her, but I don't want to have her think that I'm trying to get something from her. I just want to say thank you." And so he sends you a gift, you know? People do that. People do that when we are totally giving and loving of ourselves. Now, all of you who have had the experience of living here at the Absolute Monastery, you have the opportunity to live in unconditional love. And all of you have done your utmost to kill the unconditional lover, to destroy the unconditional lover, to tear the unconditional lover down, to give the unconditional lover all of the hardships that you can. Oh, we haven't done that. We have. Oh, yes, you have. Do you tell me your joys or your sorrows? Huh? Do you tell me your madnesses or your gladnesses? What do you tell me? All of you.
Joys.
That's what you should do. Now, that you can discipline and train yourself to do. Always tell your mommy how wonderful she is. Never how bad she is. Your mother is dying. She's dying. I'm going to tell that old bitch how terrible she was and what a miserable mother she was and how terrible she was. And she's dying and she's breathing her last breath. And you're a miserable mother. Would you ever say that?
No.
Could you ever say that?
No.
I'm in your most reckless, bad, bad, bad beingness, you couldn't do that. You could not do that because there's something about you being a human being won't let you do that. You'll say, Mom, I never told you enough how much I loved you. Mom, you did more things for me to make my life wonderful than I ever appreciated, and I want you to know I appreciate it. And Dad, I know you don't like to be kissed, but I'm going to kiss the hell out of you. And Dad goes to his grave with all these kisses and hugs and snuggles in him. He says, hey, I should have hung around longer. You see, but we have our nature, which is contrary, and a good nature. We have our good nature, which is contrary to all the worldly appearances. And if you go around belittling anybody in the world, you're belittling yourself. Now, I try to give you examples, and right away you hate me. I try to give you examples, and right away you think I'm terrible. I try to give you examples, and right away you don't understand what I'm doing. Brian is a louse. Brian is a dum-dum. Brian is stupid. Brian is no good. Brian, and you listen to me. Now, if while I'm saying those things, are you thinking, Brian, he's a wonderful guy. Brian, he's a handsome fellow. Brian, he's got a smile on his face. Brian, you don't think Brian has hurts in his heart, because that doesn't help him. You think, oh, Brian's got four wonderful children. Wow, 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 you know. And he's not even married. He's not even this. He's not even that. He's not even everything. You don't even think those things. You say, Brian is exquisite. If you say that, then you are. Now, why do I say that to you? I am your goad. I'm your challenge. And if you fall in the trap of thinking my challenges to you are what I think, why does Brian love me? Do you know Brian loves me?
Yes.
Why does he love me when I use him as a terrible example?
He doesn't know that.
For him.
You tell him. No. Oh, yes, yes. You guys go around and tell him. You say, Herb said you shouldn't do this. Herb said you shouldn't do that. Herb said this is what this is and that's what that is. Herb doesn't say anything. You say it. Herb tells you, we don't put the we put the Gannon on the tractor after we're done using the tractor, okay? Mm-hmm. We put the Gannon on the tractor. We put the Gannon on the tractor after we're done using it. Why do we say that? Why do we say that?
Attention.
No. Anita, why do we say that?
Discipline.
Why do we say it?
To have it done.
Why do we say it? Because you say it. You say, Brian, please put the Gannon on the tractor when you're done using it. No, Brian, Herb said to do it, and Herb is a mean man, nasty man. Herb is a guy who told the little kids to go to bed. If they didn't get to bed, we'd take their toys away from them. We'd take their Christmas presents away from them. And Herb said these things, and Herb said these things. You see, you don't learn the lesson. If I am not tough with you, you will not make your own decision. If I'm easy on you and you depend on me, oh, Herb, touch me. Oh, Herb, put your hand on my head. Oh, Herb, like Patrick, he was lying in Ellen's bed and he was sick as a dog and he just was going through things. And he says, Herb, help me, help me. I said, you stop having your negative thoughts. And I told him what the thoughts were. And I said, you stop hating that. Because Brian's not a hater. Patrick's not a hater. And so when he did a little hating, wow, it just sucked him back in the face, you know. And I told him. And I brought a big basin out for him to barf in and everything, you know. But the minute, apparently, he stopped hating, instantly, gone totally, as though he had never had it. But you don't listen to me. You blame me. Herb, you can heal me. You can put your hand on me. You can do these things. Sure, I can do all that stuff. But I give you, I'm here to be an example. I'm here to work with you guys, to make you think for yourself, to make you come to your own decision. You had to come to your own decision relative to your parents, relative to your world, relative to John, relative da 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 da. And I told you, don't chase. Be the desirable quarry. You know what a quarry is? The quarry is the chase. The fox chases after the squirrel. The squirrel is the fox's quarry. The rabbit's the fox's quarry. And the crows to the squirrel. The fox's quarry. And the fox goes and grabs a rabbit and has dinner. And now, you go and grab the butcher. I want my dinner. And the butcher says, how many pounds do you want? You know? And you're doing the same thing that the fox does. Just the fox is a little more primitive. The fox has his refrigerator in gear all the time. The rabbit's always in condition to be eaten. Never gets rotten. Because it's alive. And so the fox catches him. The early pioneers, they didn't need refrigerators. They caught it on the hoof. And the early Indians, the early Aztecs, they didn't have refrigerators. They didn't have freezers. They didn't have all this stuff. But they planned on things. They lived of things. They trained themselves to live in the world in which they were. And those who were the greatest students of all were the ones who didn't need anything to eat or drink or breathe. And they were there, and they are here, and that exists in this world. But we say, oh, pshaw, you know, how strange and how utterly thoughtless to say a thing so unreasonable, because the majority do it. If anyone doesn't do it, that's unreasonable. And the few who don't do it are perhaps more in the majority than you know. And why, Anita, why, stupid girl, do you need to have a spaceship? Why do you have to have a spaceship to go to space? Why do you have to have a spaceship? Because you have to have a spaceship, because you think you've got to have a spaceship. Can you go into space without it? Sure. How do you do it? With your mind. Do people go in space all the time with their mind? Sure they do. Do astronauts go in space before they go in space in their mind? Mm-hmm. You bet. Do they have space weightlessness on Earth here? Mm-hmm. See, we do all these things that are totally outrageous, totally unreasonable, totally impractical all the time. And that's what we want to train ourselves to think. Not that we do them, but we work from in here. We work from our divine center, and our divine center knows all the answers. We discipline ourselves to work from our divine center, because we can look outward forever and ever and ever and think that's where everything is, but where is it really?
Inside.
It's inside. Now, are you ready to enjoy working from the inside? That's what Stanley Felso did. He had a delightful appreciation for all of life. Out of his unhappiness, you might say, but he wasn't unhappy, out of his unhappiness of losing his parents when he was a little one, he didn't even know them. You know, he may have had them, but he didn't really know them. And then he grew up to be a wonderful man because his grandparents taught him, live in the now. Love yourself right now. Love everybody. And Stanley, if you will run around with Herb Byerly, you'll run around with the most magnificent being on the face of the earth. Now, surely they said that. They probably said that often to him. And he says, yes, I know, Grandma. I know, you know. But isn't that true?
Yes.
Yeah, isn't that true? Now, Herb, why are you talking about yourself like that? Well, I'm talking to you like that because I'm saying to you, Brian is terrible. I'm saying to you all these other things to just shake your boat and shake your mental boat. And if I cannot shake your mental boat, your peace, then you have come a long way, Charlie Brown.
Golly.
And I love it. And this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
Be delightfully
appreciative.
Always. Mm-hmm. And so it is.
Thank you.
That's a lovely 30-minute talk. Because I'm lovely.
Wowie.